The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Wanna take a ride? Broadcasting from the sprawling outskirts of the Florida Everglades, in the intellectual wilderness of South Florida, the outer regions of humanity that people move to just because it doesn't snow. This is the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, here we go. I'm going to keep my comments to a minimum because we are at the tail end of Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch's testimony in the Donald Trump impeachment inquiry. So let's get to that testimony right now. All right, Sean Patrick Maloney, Democrat, is asking questions right now.
Your house, excuse me. And you were giving her the Woman of Courage Award, I believe.
Yeah, the Embassy Kyiv's Woman of Courage Award.
Right. And, of course, that's the day you get a call from Carol Perez, a senior member of the Foreign Service. Did you know Carol Perez?
Yes.
You're both senior women in the Foreign Service. You had an opportunity to meet her before?
Yes.
And she says there's trouble coming. I want to give you a heads up. Correct me if I get this wrong, and I don't know a lot, but it's coming from the White House. I'll call you later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sums it up.
But you're literally that evening honoring this anti-corruption activist. Is that right?
Yes.
And not just any woman, but a woman who was, you said, horribly attacked and killed for her efforts. And she wasn't just killed. You said I believe that someone threw acid on her.
Ooh. That's correct.
And I went and I checked during the break, and it turns out she was horribly injured, and it took 4 months for her to die. Is that right?
A very painful death.
God.
Why would somebody attack her with acid? There are easier ways to kill people. Why do you think they did it with acid?
Well, I think they wanted her out of the way, but I think the message was this could happen to you too.
Uh-oh.
If you continue her work.
That's what happens when you go up against corrupt people in Ukraine.
It is something that can happen. I mean, there are other ways of sidelining people.
Do you remember speaking at that event?
I do.
I went and looked at what you said. You said, Katerina paid the ultimate price for her fearlessness in fighting against corruption and for her determined efforts to build a democratic Ukraine. Do you remember saying that?
Yes.
And then your phone rings and you hear there's trouble up the street. And Carol Perez called you back later that night, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was 1 a.m., I believe.
Yes.
Were you sleeping?
No.
You had stayed up?
Yes.
To get the phone call?
Yes.
And that's when she says two things, I believe, that really stuck with me. She said, we're worried about your security.
Yes.
You've just been honoring a woman who was killed for fighting for her anti-corruption efforts. And she says, you got to get on the next plane. Was she speaking euphemistically, get on the next plane, you know, when you get time? Did she mean literally the next plane?
Well, I think
she was
meant,
saying, get the fuck out of there. You're in danger.
But pretty much it was the next plane.
And that's a pretty good flight back from Kyiv to Washington. And you're on your way to meet with Deputy Secretary Sullivan.
Yes.
And he says to you two things. He says there was a concerted effort against you. And he says you've done nothing wrong.
Right.
And when he said, what I'm fascinated about is when he says you've done nothing wrong, what did you expect the United States government would do next?
You know, it was pretty clear that a decision had been made by the president, implemented by the State Department, that I had to leave Ukraine. But I'd hoped that there would be more public support.
Did you expect them to have your back?
Yes.
The Trump administration?
And were you surprised when you found out they weren't gonna?
Not at that point anymore.
Why?
Well, because over the last several months, that had not been the case.
Because Trump is the president,
that's
why.
Ma'am, in your opening statement, you said, how could our system fail like this?
Yeah.
How is it that foreign corrupt interests could manipulate our government? How could our system fail like this? How is it that foreign corrupt interests could manipulate our government? I want you to know, ma'am, that is the very question we are determined to get an answer for. And I want to thank you on behalf of your country for your service and with our work in answering that question. I yield back, Mr. Chairman.
From my notes, still to come is
Ms. Demings.
Val Demings and then Congressman Krishnamurthy, and then the closing statement. So just two more rounds of questions, 5 minutes each.
Should be thankful for your service.
Or two more 5 minute segments of questions. You know what I mean.
I have four little girls in my life, and as I sit here thinking about them, and as a woman, I cannot be prouder of you, and I consider you an inspiration for women around the world. I just have to say before I get into my questioning is, I think it's disgraceful to hear my colleagues refer to your sworn testimony as a performance today, or speak in a condescending way, basically suggesting that the woman, because I think that's how the president referred to you.
The
I'm
woman.
Not sure he knows your name or there's some other meaning there. But to basically suggest that the woman should be thankful for whatever she was left with. Smear campaign and all after your you were recalled. But I want you to know today that we thank you for your service, your 33 years of service. Ambassador, on a press conference call on October 17th, acting White House Chief of Staff Mulvaney discussed his belief that it's entirely appropriate to politicize U.S. foreign policy. Here's what he said. If you read the news reports and you believe them, what did McKinley say yesterday? Well, McKinley said yesterday that he was really upset with the political influence in foreign policy. That was one of the reasons he was so upset about this. And I have news for everybody. Get over it. There's going to be political influence in foreign policy.
Hey, Mick, if you've got nothing to hide, why not testify?
The concern raised by Ambassador McKinley in testimony before this committee about political influence in foreign policy.
Well, as I said before, I think it's important to keep political influence out of foreign policy because we all, whether we are Republican or Democrats or something else, have common security interests, and that needs to be safeguarded and advanced.
And what message do you think it sends to other foreign service officers and public servants, which we so desperately need good ones, when an administration refuses to support its own officials in the face of a smear campaign?
Well, it's deeply troubling. It's deeply troubling, and there are morale issues at the State Department.
Morale issues at the State Department. I can understand why. On March 20th of 2019, President Trump tweeted an article that included a letter from Representative Pete Sessions that said you had, and I quote, spoken privately and repeatedly about your disdain for the current administration in a way that might call for the expulsion of you as your ambassador to Ukraine immediately. Did you speak publicly and privately about your disdain for the Trump administration?
I would have.
No.
She didn't. I would have.
Why do you think the president would want to push such a lie?
Because he's a liar.
I don't know. I don't know.
Because every time he opens his mouth, he lies.
Policies change, but U.S. interests don't. Not for those who are seeking to do the work of protecting our nation, the work you have done for decades. The president, his chief of staff, and his allies seem to want nothing more than to smear the good people trying to protect this country and to hijack our institutions for their personal and political gain. Again, Ambassador, we thank you so much for your service, and I'll yield my remaining time to
Krishnamurthy
the chairman.
Is up next.
Thank you.
I thank the gentlewoman. I'm going to go to Mr. Krishnamurthy.
There we go. And he should be the last one before closing
comments.
Good
afternoon, Ambassador, and thank you to the family as well for being here in support of you today. I'd like to direct you to an area of bipartisanship, namely aid to Ukraine. Congress, on an overwhelmingly bipartisan basis, has appropriated hundreds of millions of dollars in military assistance to Ukraine, correct?
Yes.
And that aid is being used by Ukraine to fight a common adversary, namely Russia, right?
Yes.
The U.S., in fact, has consistently partnered with other European countries to keep Russia at bay and maintain the peace in Europe, right?
Yes.
As Ambassador Taylor suggested earlier this week, supporting Ukraine helps maintain peace so that Americans don't have to go to war again in Europe, right?
Yes.
Suspending that aid and weakening Ukraine can increase the likelihood of the opposite, correct?
Yes, it is extremely short-sighted.
The last time you were in Ukraine was May 20th of this year, right?
Yes.
In his opening statement, Ambassador Taylor said he took charge in Ukraine on June 17th.
Yes.
Therefore, there was almost a one-month gap between the time you departed and when Taylor took over, right?
Yes, yes.
During that time, on May 20th, Ambassador Sondland, Rick Perry, and others came to the inauguration of President Zelensky, right?
Yes,
but not
Pence. And during that gap in time, Ambassador Sondland visited the White House, along with others, and got directions from President Trump to talk to Rudy. Those were his words. Talk to Rudy about what to do in Ukraine, right?
That's my understanding.
In other words, isn't it the case that your departure and the one-month gap between the time you left and when Ambassador Taylor arrived provided the perfect opportunity?
Oh, no. Oh, no. The stream froze. The perfect opportunity. Come on, Krishnamurthy. Continue. I know I'm eating up the bandwidth here. Come on. Best laid plans, right? Seriously, I've got, you see this? This
louder into
there
the
we
mic.
Go.
Yes.
Thank you. On page 10 of your opening statement, you mentioned, quote,
blame
unquote,
AT&T.
Corrupt interests apparently hijacking our Ukraine policy, right?
Yes.
A couple suspect individuals in that regard were Lev Parnas and Igor. Opening statement, you mentioned, quote, unquote, corrupt interests.
Oh, no. I guess everybody's watching the stream. It keeps breaking up. Let's see. I think I have a backup stream that I can go to. Will this one play? No, this one's frozen, too. Oh, man. Oh, man. It would just have a few more minutes. Come on.
Gas company, correct?
Go.
Yes.
How did you learn that, by the way?
I heard it from the Minister of Interior.
Interestingly, at noon today, The Wall Street Journal reported that federal prosecutors in Manhattan are investigating whether Rudy Giuliani stood to personally profit from that. Another line of questioning that I had for Ambassador Taylor earlier this week. He said that there were irregular channels of diplomacy at work in Ukraine, circumventing normal diplomatic channels and threatening American interests in favor of private interests. I asked him the question, can you rule out the possibility that these irregular channels of diplomacy are being used in other countries where we conduct foreign policy?
No.
In response, he said that he could not rule it out. Ambassador Yovanovitch, I ask you, and I assume that you can't rule it out either, correct?
I can't, but I would also add I have no knowledge of that.
I understand. Are you concerned that these irregular channels of diplomacy may be at work elsewhere?
I think it's a possibility.
You testified that it was a quote-unquote dangerous precedent that private interests and people who don't like a particular that these irregular channels of diplomacy may be at work elsewhere.
I think it's a possibility.
You testified that it was a quote-unquote dangerous precedent that private interests and people who don't like a particular ambassador could combine to replace that ambassador. Are you concerned that other ambassadors may suffer the same fate as you?
Yes.
Good camera work there. For some reason, they just
panned
down to the
Ambassador, in your service as an American diplomat, you have encountered various dictators and strong men ruling other countries, right?
Yes.
In your personal life, your parents fled the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany, and they became familiar with despots and dictators as well.
Is that how you would describe Donald Trump, Ambassador? Yes, it is.
Right?
Sorry.
Well, maybe.
Is it a feature of authoritarianism to allow corrupt interests to hijack foreign policy?
Yeah.
Is it a feature of authoritarianism for the rulers there to claim absolute rights?
Ooh, like Trump.
Yes.
Yes.
And is it a hallmark of authoritarianism for those rulers to smear their opponents?
Ooh.
Sometimes, yes.
Sounds like Donald Trump.
Thank you.
Good points, Mr. Krishnamurthy.
The gentleman's expired. Mr. Nunes, do you have any concluding
okay,
remarks?
Okay, now Nunes, closing remarks. Oi, bring in the cow. Come on.
I would just say to the American people, today's show trial has come
show
to an
trial.
End.
Show trial. Fuck you.
We're headed down now to the basement of the Capitol to go until, I don't know what time, and we'll be back there hiding again.
You're not hiding. It's getting a deposition from a witness who hasn't been deposed yet, you moron.
More witnesses that you may or may not be able to see in the public. I hate to break it to my colleagues if there's anyone else out there watching television ratings, but they must be plummeting right now.
Yeah, because you came on the screen.
I suggest that we get back to the work of the Intelligence Committee, that we pass a trade agreement with the United States, Mexico, and Canada that would actually help the American people out, because this
they can chew gum and walk at the same time. You're an embarrassment. You are an embarrassment.
No, I have some chairman concluding remarks. Ambassador, I want to thank you for your decades of service. I want to thank you, as Mr. Maloney said, for being the first one through the gap. What you did in coming forward in answering a lawful subpoena was to give courage to others that also witnessed wrongdoing.
Hell yeah.
That they, too, could show the same courage that you have, that they could stand up, speak out, answer questions. They could endure whatever threats, insults may come their way. And so in your long and distinguished career, you have done another great public service in answering the call of our subpoena and testifying before us today. I think you gathered from our comments that we not only grieve for what you went through, but what damage is being done to the State Department, to career federal foreign service officers all over the country. I am profoundly grateful to you and Mr. Kent and Ambassador Taylor, who have done so much in the last 2 days or 3 days to show the American people the face of our diplomatic corps, the extraordinary public servants who work all around the world in very dangerous places, as you have. And so I'm glad they've gotten to see you.
Me too.
Because you're often vilified as bureaucrats, or diplomacy is diminished as is unimportant. Anything other than the military doesn't really matter, when it's your efforts that often prevent us from going to war. Sometimes you're disparaged as the deep state. But what you are is what holds this country together. What holds our foreign policy together, what makes it seamless, what makes it work. And I'm glad America gets to see that. I will just emphasize once again about the importance of your testimony. Mr. Kent and Ambassador Taylor gave us the broad outlines of this story. This is a story about an effort to coerce, condition, or bribe
extort a
foreign country into doing the dirty work of the president, investigations of his political rival, by conditioning U.S. taxpayer money, by conditioning a meeting that President Zelensky desperately wanted and needed to establish that relationship with the most powerful patron of Ukraine, the United States of America. The fact that they failed in this solicitation of bribery doesn't make it any less bribery, doesn't make it any less immoral or corrupt.
True.
It just means it was unsuccessful.
Exactly.
And to that, we owe
exactly
other dedicated public
the
servants
attempt
who
is
blew
the crime
the whistle. Had they not blown the whistle, we wouldn't be here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is appalling that my colleagues continue to want to out this whistleblower so that he or she can be punished by
That's
this
right.
president.
Yep.
But let's underscore once again, while you are the beginning of this story, you're not the end of it, but nonetheless, the beginning is important, because the beginning of the story is an effort to get you out of the way, an effort by Rudy Giuliani and Fruman and Parnas and
Henchman.
Corrupt Ukrainians like Lutsenko to get you out of the way, because they felt you were an impediment to these political investigations the president so desperately wanted. Giuliani has made it abundantly clear he was in Ukraine on a mission for his client, for the president,
yep,
to investigate the Bidens. And you were viewed as an obstacle that had to go, not just by Giuliani, but by the president of the United States. And if people had any doubt about it, they should do what the president asks, read the transcript.
That's right.
And what they'll see in that transcript is the president praises the corrupt. He praises the corrupt, Lutsenko. He condemns the just, you. And then he asks for an investigation of the Bidens. Mm. There is no camouflaging that corrupt intent.
No, not at all.
We are adjourned.
Speaker, condition.
We're adjourned.
Mr. Chairman, you disparage those members on this side of the aisle. We should have a chance to respond to your.
No, you shouldn't. The hearing is adjourned. Nunes, is this that Nunes saying this? And his microphone's been cut off. Love it. And with that, they are done. And we are cutting away. Wait, let's just hear. No, they're done. Absolutely. Okay. So there you have it. Today's day two of the impeachment inquiry into Donald J. Trump is now in the history books. Today, it was Ambassador Marie Masha Yovanovitch, and she was fucking awesome. And we covered a lot of territory today. Today, we're going to do things a little differently. Obviously, I didn't have time to cut up audio. I have a few clips to share with you. But we're going to bring on a panel today of our old pals, friends of the show, Dave Johnson and Thomas Neuberger. Thomas, you know, who is the commentator formerly known as Gaius Publius. So I'll tell you what, I got to get them on the line. While we do that, let's listen to our comedy bit for the day to wrap up the week. It comes from our friend Lauren Mayer, and it's sort of an ode to Adam Schiff. Take it away, Lauren Mayer.
Though I've tried, I no longer can hide my feelings so fervent for a certain understated, dedicated civil servant. Oh, Adam Schiff, that terrific committee chairman, is a great legislator, but also a kind and fair man, who sure knows his Constitution, and he may be the nation's solution, who won my affection as soon as he demolished Devin Nunes. This mild-mannered vegan politician from Burbank might resemble a minor branch manager for some obscure bank, but his grit on the Intel committee is off the chart, and that's why Adam Schiff is the chairman of my heart. Now that he's famous, his name has been discovered. He's a nice Jewish boy, went to Stanford and to Harvard. But he's modest, in fact, he's the opposite of what a snob is. And as his license plate says, he doesn't roll on Shabbos. Such a mensch! Now he's leading impeachment hearings, truly a stunner. With endurance to spare, 'cause he's literally a marathon runner. Shredding GOP nonsense apart, not just dreamy, he's extremely smart. Oh, Adam Schiff, you're the chairman of my heart. Your questions devastate me. I wish you'd interrogate me. Democrats have found their man. Well, I plots because I've got the hots for this rare man. And I know you're married, so am I. I just have the hots for you politically and intellectually. So don't worry. Forgive this riff. Adam Schiff, you're the chairman of my heart.
Subpoena me, and I'll testify. I adore you.
Ooh. Ooh, baby.
And intellectually, that is.
Uh-huh. Okay. Lorne Mayer, everyone. All right. Trying to connect with Dave Johnson. He's not here yet, but we can welcome our first member of the panel to the program. We do it like this.
All rise for Gaius Publius.
That's not his real name.
You call Gaius Publius into question?
Sure.
Very well. For the audience at home.
What is the real name of Gaius Publius?
Lonnie Anderson?
No, I'm sorry. You're wrong.
What is it? I got it. No, I can't take it
anymore.
All
right, I'll tell you. Calm down. His real name is Thomas Neuberger.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's it?
That's it. Thomas Neuberger.
Oh.
And now here's Thomas Neuberger on the Nicole Sandler Show.
And there's Dave Johnson.
Olson Johnson is right. I say we stay and fight it out.
Dr. Samuel Johnson's right about Olson Johnson's being right. And I'm not giving up my ice cream parlor that I built with these two hands for nothing or nobody.
Howard Johnson is right.
The latest in a long line of Johnsons who were right. Correct. It's Dave Johnson on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you so much for being here today on this day two of the public hearings for the Donald Trump impeachment inquiry. I know, Dave Johnson, I believe you've been watching. Tom, have you watched as well?
I have a little bit. I'm much less interested in these details than others are, and I have many other things to pay attention to. I leave it to people like you and Dave to do that for me.
Okay.
I have concerns about the story around the story, and I don't think the two halves of the story, the inner story and the outer story, are necessarily in conflict.
All right. Well, we'll get back to that in a moment. Dave Johnson, you're here. Have you been watching?
Yeah, I've been watching the upper and lower parts of the story, not the inner and outer.
You and me both. Oh, my goodness. Well, today, I thought, just in watch, having been glued to the computer screen both days, today and Wednesday, I thought today's testimony was a lot more effective than Wednesday's. But I do see the Democrats weaving together a narrative to explain
exactly
what's going on here. So, Dave, your overall impression, how's it going so far?
Well, my overall impression is what you said. They're building a story. It's probably not something like I'm old. I'm really old. Okay?
Yeah, you're older than me, so you're really old. Yes. Okay.
Watergate.
Yes, Watergate.
And that, for some reason, it was riveting. But I think our brains are different now because of things like Twitter. I mean, I can't even read something that's more than like half a page anymore. You know. But so we're not. A lot of people aren't watching, but they are very carefully developing the facts of the story, you know, over time. So it's not a daily reality show that everybody's glued to, but they have to do this. They have to get the facts of what happened out there. And then at the end of it, you know, everything will be out there and the story will be, the facts will be known.
Right.
So that's what's
right.
happening. And they're doing it. I got to say, after watching the Mueller hearings, they changed everything. They're doing a very good job this time.
And bringing in, excuse me, Dan, what's his name? Goldman, I think. Daniel Goldman is doing a great job asking the questions in the 45-minute segment for the Democrats. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, this guy Castro, who's asking the question for the Republicans, is it me, Dave? Or was he just really bad?
Well, maybe he has a modicum of integrity. Who knows?
I mean, no, like, I don't think so.
How could you do what they're doing for 45 minutes, you know? And what the hell is he going to say?
Okay.
I think it was Oliver Willis. Oliver Willis is so good. He tweeted something out about it now from the Republicans. Yes, this happened, but what about the robots on the moon base that the Democrats are threatening us with?
Huh?
How are we going to survive when the Democrats unleash the robots from the moon base?
Oh, good question.
That's kind of what the
Republicans
sequence.
Were asking, right?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and that's kind of what the Republicans were asking.
The first day, that opening sequence with Schiff and then Nunes, and it was like everybody's like, "What? What's he talking about?" And it was like you have to be caught in this weird Republican conspiracy bubble to even understand the words he was using. It was just so out there.
It was out there. Now, Tom Neuberger, our listeners know him as Gaius Publius, but these days he's writing under his actual real name, Thomas Neuberger.
Ever since he got into New York Times.
Yes, well, that'll do it, you know. That'll do it, Tui.
The New York Times.
Yes. So, Tom, you said you're more concerned with the inside-outside story. Tell us what your take on the whole thing is.
Well, so this is going to be orthogonal. I said that for you,
orthogonal.
Dave. This is going to be sideways to what.
But I have a math degree in math.
I don't. Okay, so go on.
Well, I have a math degree in philosophy, so talk about orthogonal.
I'll have to look that one up.
I've been puzzling all morning how to approach this, and I haven't written a lot about it because it is difficult. But let me give my framework this way. There's a concept, I don't know if I'm the original on these terms or not. I think it's new to me, but maybe not. Tabloid demon and tabloid saint. A tabloid demon, you go to the grocery store, you look at the newsstand at the checkout counter,
right,
and you see a story about Octomom.
Right.
Octomom is a tabloid demon. There is nothing good that can be allowed to be printed about her.
Okay.
If she saves a cat from drowning, you can't print that story. You can only print about how she's overweight and eating ice cream on
I'm surprised she's even being written about anymore. When she had those kids, what, at least 15 years ago, right?
I'm old enough to remember.
So am I.
So am I. But it's such a great name.
Yes, it is. Okay, so that's an example.
Saint,
gotcha.
A good example is Jennifer Aniston.
Okay.
You can't print anything bad about her.
Right.
And yet these people are very mixed people. All people are mixed people. So in the political sphere, you've got now I'm not only an unabashed lefty, I'm an unabashed far lefty.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I'm to the left of the current Democratic Party, and I almost despise them in their current.
Well, I think all three of us are, so we have that in common. So that doesn't set you apart from us.
No, I'm talking with our audience in mind.
Right. Gotcha.
As well.
Okay.
I see a world in which we are so. I'm a kind of a Matt Taibbi in Hate Incorporated advocate. I see a world in which, from the MSNBC perspective, everything Republicans do is bad, and everything they say is a lie, even when it isn't. And everything Democrats do is defensible, even when it isn't. So from an MSNBC perspective, for example, there's no way to crit. Now, I'm not talking about the three of us here, but from an MSNBC perspective, there's no way to criticize Joe Biden for being incredibly corrupt.
Okay.
His entire life.
Right.
And as much of a liar as Trump, it rolls right out of his mouth because he has to be defended because Democrat. And there's no way to admit that the right-wing media can say anything that's truthful at all because they're the right-wing media and they're horrible. And they are. They're looking for
basically no gray area. Everything's black and white.
Well, let's not say gray area. Let's say that some things that come from the right are actually correct. They're making points, even if they're making points in defense of a project that I hate.
Okay.
In the same way, some things that the left media does is absolutely disgusting, even though they are opposing the right-wing agenda that I hate defending a left-wing agenda that I also hate.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at this whole – I started with Mueller-gate, and I went back to – I'm going out to this Ukraine thing, and I'm looking at, okay, what are the nuggets of truth in here regardless of the sources from which they come? And that gives me a kind of a spy novel picture that says you've got a stage with 20 people on it and a spotlight on two people having a conversation. And the lights are very dim on the other 20, but they're all doing stuff and nobody's talking about it.
Okay.
That's my perspective.
All right. I'm not sure I know where you're going with that. Dave, do you know where he's going with that?
He does, actually, but I can give it to you in a sentence.
Okay.
That Trump has offended the national security state so violently that they indeed want to remove him from office. Now, should Trump be removed from office for a million other things? Absolutely. I would have impeached him on day one for violating the Emoluments Clause. I would have impeached Bush on day one for the torture regime as soon as Abu Ghraib came out.
Right.
Democrats won't go there.
No, they won't. So what I don't understand, you're faulting the Democrats for going after him for whatever reason.
I'm not faulting the Democrats for anything. I'm looking at the broader story. And the story that the Democrats are not telling and can't tell is the fact that the whistleblower, for example, is a serving CIA officer who was detailed to the White House.
Yeah.
Spilled the beans on the White House and then went back to the CIA. Now, do those beans have substance?
Why not?
Probably they. Let me finish. Probably they do. But he went back to his work at the CIA. Doesn't that tell you that maybe the CIA is in the business of spilling the beans on the White House? And even if those beans are horrible, do we want the CIA to be acting against an elected president?
I want the CIA to be protecting the country. And if that means
from a corrupt maniac
of a person occupying the Oval Office, I was hoping there were career professionals in the intelligence community, in the State Department, in the White House, who would protect us against the insanity that, frankly, the Electoral College should have protected us against. That's the reason for the Electoral College, to prevent someone like Donald Trump from becoming president. They didn't do their job. The reason the Electoral College was put in the Constitution, they didn't do their job. So you have to leave it up to the professionals. Thank goodness this whistleblower was there and said, wait a minute, this is wrong. I'm going to come out and blow the whistle to tell them they need to investigate this. Dave Johnson, am I wrong here?
Can I make one more point?
Okay.
Just one more short. What the CIA is also protecting is the neocon war against Russia that started when Clinton violated the agreement that George H.W. Bush had with Gorbachev not to advance NATO to the east. That's what they're protecting, the neocon war against Russia. Both things are true, Nicole.
Okay,
what you say is true, and this other thing is true. And I'm worried that the other thing that's true is getting lost because the narrative from the left erases it.
Hmm.
I'm done.
Okay.
That's it. Go ahead, Dave.
Please. Dave, your turn.
Okay. The leadership of the CIA has historically not been our friend.
Right.
And excellent book all the way back, I think Beschloss wrote it, about the U2 incident that talks about how the CIA sabotaged an upcoming peace mission between Eisenhower and Khrushchev. Remember the whole Red Scare days and everything,
right.
And it's an excellent book, and where Eisenhower would not be in the same room with Dulles, the CIA Dulles,
right,
without witnesses ever again after that, for example.
Okay.
And Guatemala and Iran and the American imperial policies for so long. The FBI has, leadership-wise, been even worse, not our friend, have to say.
Mm-hmm.
Someone I knew was shot in one of these 1960s assassination things. The person I knew wasn't killed. So that said, when other people in these agencies, for example, in this instance, witnessing a crime,
mm-hmm.
you're witnessing a crime. What are you going to do? You're witnessing a crime. Now, as far as the whistleblower is concerned, since the whistleblower is not relevant in any way anymore.
No, not at all.
I mean, everything the whistleblower said is now in testimony by everyone involved that the president will allow to go before Congress, or several, actually most of the ones we're seeing just defied the president and went in front of Congress anyway when they were subpoenaed or asked, okay? And then the president's saying, well, nobody else, you know, he's trying to stop everybody, and we'll get to this, I'm sure, but today he actually went into full witness intimidation mode.
Oh, my God.
As we'll talk about.
Yes.
Okay, so I see everything Tom's saying. I don't see that changes what we're seeing that happened. And my problem with what happened is that the Democrats were doing everything they could to avoid impeachment, to avoid bringing it up. They were so sure there's going to be this terrible backlash, and they had this weird narrative about a backlash against the Republicans for Clinton, which actually isn't what happened at all. Clinton was impeached after that election. Anyway, so they just avoided everything. But here we are with this one, and this one was right up front clearly about rigging the next election.
Of course it was.
And it wasn't about participating with the Russians in the last election. This was about, if he can do this, he's blatantly rigging the next election.
Or trying to.
Then elections are over.
And
we're going to have a lot of trouble after
right,
this anyway.
And
okay.
He's trying to enlist the help of a leader of a foreign country to manufacture dirt on a political opponent, and in order to coerce him into doing it, he's holding up military aid that has already been appropriated by Congress. I think you guys
are
overcomplicating things. Those are the facts. Tom, can you deny that those are the facts?
I'm going to go in defense of Tom time.
I'm saying that both of these things can
Tom,
be true.
Tom, let me defend you one
I'm
more time real quick.
The second thing that's not being
okay,
said.
Hold on. Let Dave finish his point.
Biden has become wealthy since he left office,
yes.
Drew, and you'll appreciate
they
this
all do.
Speaking fees
of course,
and such.
Right?
Biden's son had no business being on that board.
None whatsoever.
And he himself has said so.
I agree.
No business being on the board of some company which no longer has anything to do whatsoever with what happened. Okay.
Okay.
I'm done.
All right. So, Tom, then what I laid out the facts. It's very simple. Coercion to get the new president, a naive neophyte of a president, sort of like the one we have here, only this guy's not an idiot, to play along with his bullshit demands for an investigation and to publicly say we're having an investigation into the Bidens and Burisma in order to get the release of the funds that Congress allocated for them. That alone, that's criminal. I don't care who blew the whistle on it. I'm just glad somebody did.
Nicole, I'm not disputing any of that.
Okay.
I don't disagree with any of that. All of those things are true.
So then what's
the
problem?
All true. And,
right.
and a whole lot. The problem is there is more to the story than is being covered. And what's the part that once we're past this event, what we've got, the results of not telling the whole story is that the Democratic Party has been put in the position of blindly defending the neocon project to encircle Russia.
Okay, but do you
that's,
not
that's
believe that, that okay,
you,
Ukraine
Obama,
is...
Obama didn't want to send those arms to the
right.
Ukraine.
I know he did.
For exactly the reason that we discussed. Now, is that the reason Trump didn't want to? No, Trump didn't want to because of a corrupt reason.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is an idiot. He's a shyster. He's a P.T. Barnum with evil intent. He doesn't have that kind of intellectual integrity
of course
to have,
not.
Have that kind of project. But the point is that we've got the whole of the Democratic Party for the last 2 years now wrapped around the neocon project against Russia. We did it through the Trump-Russia whole thing,
but
we're now
what,
doing
what,
it
what
this.
Should we be
the
doing?
Neocons
we
are
should
winning
be, we
as
should
a
be
result of
playing
this.
Nice with Russia because they're so good to us. I don't understand. Look, the whole thing with Turkey and invading Syria and going after our allies who fought and died for us. The Kurds, this is playing into Russia's hands. I agree we don't want to wage war with them, but we also don't want to roll over and let Vladimir Putin just take over that part of the world, which he's trying to do with Ukraine. I'd rather see an independent Ukraine than Ukraine annexed by Russia again to start rebuilding the USSR.
I don't think Russia wants to annex Ukraine. I think Ukraine has two natural
They're doing
to natural population.
They're doing it.
They're doing it.
In what way?
In what way? They already took over Crimea. They've invaded Ukraine. And this is what... There's a war being fought there. Russia is trying to once again take over Ukraine to bring them into their country. I don't know if they want to reform the Soviet Union or if they just want Ukraine under their control because they don't want Ukraine to become a NATO member or certainly part of the European Union, which is what makes it really weird that the whole Sundland thing. If Trump doesn't consider Ukraine part of the EU, then why allow the ambassador of the EU to have any jurisdiction or any say in what happens in Ukraine at all?
I think a lot of Russian experts like Stephen Cohen, for example, who may be a bad name here, but this is Katrina Vandenhoevel's husband, who is a Russia expert.
And he's very invested in his point of view.
Would say that Ukraine has two natural populations, Ukraine-speaking and Russian-speaking. And that from Putin's point of view, the attempt to get all of Ukraine to join NATO we've got it going back to 2008 when Ukraine and Georgia were first considered for membership in NATO. This is 2008 when Bush II was president. The U.S. the Russian ambassador said, "Yet means yet." We're not going to let Ukraine join NATO because that's against our strategic interest. That would be kind of like Cuba saying we want to join the Warsaw Pact, and then host bases.
Okay,
people remember the Cuban Missile Crisis. There are subtleties here that are not being considered because things are being painted as all blue or all green. And there are subtleties.
But they're trying to lay out a case to prove that what Donald Trump did was impeachable, and it was. He tried to bribe the Ukrainian president to do something to get dirt on a personal political opponent of the president's in order to get the monies released that Congress has already allocated. I don't see what's so difficult.
I'm not disputing any of that. I'm not disputing any of that. I'm not disputing the fact that they should hold an impeachment hearing on grounds that he should be impeached. I think is politically a bad move, but we can talk about that separately. But I don't dispute what's going on.
Okay, Dave?
Yeah, I want to clear something up. You got it backwards. He extorted a bribe from the Ukrainian president. The bribe, the thing of value, was giving Trump the political
cover, right? The story
advantage over Biden, and the extortion was withholding the. And these are two separate incidents. If he hadn't withheld the Javelin missiles, etc., he was still soliciting the bribe.
Of course,
getting the foreign country to pretend they're investigating Biden.
So Dave, your phone is breaking up now. It's one thing after another today. All right, so let's get off of this. We think we all agree that if we just take it at its simplest, look, I used to think that, and I did until the day Donald Trump took office, I believed that when a president, after the inauguration festivities are complete, and the president goes into the Oval Office and sits behind the desk for the first time, they are visited by members of the CIA and the FBI and the NSA and whatever other three-letter agencies are out there who say, okay, Mr. President, congratulations. Now let us tell you how things really work around here. But seeing what Donald Trump has done, I no longer believe that. I believe we're fucked unless there are real patriots in every level of our government and these three-letter alphabet agencies protecting us, not letting someone become a dictator, which is exactly what Donald Trump wants to do. And at this point, I'll let anybody who wants to be hero come in and be hero, and we'll deal with the consequences afterwards, because I think we're in such a dire position.
So the conclusion from that is, if the CIA wants to operate behind the scenes to perform what has to be described as regime change, that would be a good thing because
now,
Trump
how about
is so
just
bad and
outing?
The situation is so dire.
How about them just outing reprehensible, illegal behavior? I'm not saying depose, you know, somebody because you don't like him. I'm saying this guy is breaking laws left and right. Every time he opens his mouth, he's lying about something, and he is risking national security because he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. We need protecting from him, and I'll take the help from wherever we can get it at this point.
Okay.
That's
okay.
Me.
I understand that point of view, and it's widely shared.
I'm going to call you back.
Okay. I think Dave just said he's going to call us back. Okay, because we had a very bad connection. Hold on. Let's see if he, Dave Johnson, you there? Hello? No, I don't hear him at all. Damn it. Tom, are you still there?
Now you can hear me.
Oh, there we go. Okay, there you are. What, that was
clear, Dave.
Boy,
good.
Talk about a delayed response. Okay, Dave, so you're back on a better line.
Okay, so I understand everything Tom's saying, but I don't see anything nefarious here that anybody did. I mean, if
I don't
it was
either.
Some kind of maneuvered story, that's what regime change is when you come up with a maneuvered story and manipulate the situation and all of those things. This is just reporting the fact of something that was on a phone call, for example. The Russia thing was actually reporting that Russia had hacked the DNC servers and that the Trump people were cooperating with them. I mean, that's not a nefarious background operation to cause a regime change. There have been those. I've seen the kind of operations they did against Carter, and it wasn't the CIA, but the same kind of stuff done against Clinton by the Republican Party and their deep state of these weird organizations and stuff. So I understand what Tom's saying, but I don't see any signs of that happening here.
Right. It's not like they're taking a good president and trying to overthrow him to put in their pick. Now, do we need to safeguard against that kind of stuff? Absolutely. Obviously, our intelligence community is kind of FUBAR. We need to get it in order. We need to get everything in order. But in order to get things in order, we need to get rid of Trump.
Responding to
Trump,
Dave.
Yeah.
Just for a second. The idea of the whole, so I'm not referring to one incident, the whistleblower. I'm referring to quite a few, and I've done enormous amount of digging into the origin story of the Trump Russia thing. I listen to a lot of people. There's a lot of differences of opinion. To talk just about the DNC server, it's like opening the door to what you think is a closet, and it turns out to be another ballroom. So I think that maybe that's a subject for another discussion. Mm-hmm. Who actually did that hacking? Because there's a lot of evidence in a lot of different directions. But just to take the general point, Nicole, that you just made, the CIA hypothetical, we don't want the CIA to take out a good president. Do we want the CIA to take out a bad president?
Of course.
No,
well,
no,
not
no.
A bad president, but a corrupt on the magnitude of Donald Trump, where I believe our very survival is on the line. I don't want them to take him out, but I want them to wave a red flag when they see illegal, immoral, unconstitutional actions on the part of the president. That's part of their job, is to protect us against all enemies, foreign and domestic. He's a domestic enemy. And look, I think that whoever this anonymous person is who wrote this book is chicken shit, needs to come forward and tell the people under oath what he or she knows. This, you know, dancing around the edges and, ooh, I can tell you a story. Look at Bolton. I know stuff that hasn't been out there yet, but I'm not going to tell you, but I'll sign a $2 million book deal and I'll tell them. This is all bullshit. If you know something, say something, goddammit. Sorry.
Go over to you, Dave. I think we're running out of time here. You can have the last word.
All right. So the hearings were, you know, fascinating for some of us political junkie type. They are methodically, carefully digging out the story, I think. That's a pretty bad story. And I think that at the end of the day, here's what I fear is going to happen, is that the Republicans, it'll go to the Senate will make some kind of mockery out of it and let Trump off the hook. And then Trump could say, oh, my God, we've had an attempted coup, just like they did in Turkey. And after that, Turkey rounded up, what, 60,000 people into jail. All the reporters in Turkey who said anything about what this guy Erdogan was up to got put in jail.
Of course.
All of his political opponents, et cetera, et cetera. And
right.
That's the trouble with that's the kind of stuff we're seeing the prelude to with what Trump did here.
Of course.
Political investigations of his enemies, et cetera. And we're on the precipice. OK, so yeah, I think the Democrats waited far too long.
So do I.
Far too long. And I understand they want to keep it short and simple so they can make a good case. But they should have been on it from day one, the emoluments clause. And now we're in real trouble, especially if that's the route Trump's going to take.
Right. And he will do whatever it takes. Look, I'm more worried that he's going to start a war somewhere, another war somewhere.
Right.
Because
right.
he believes, yep. as we know from a tweet that he sent out in 2012, something along the lines of, watch Obama start a war with Iran so he'll win the next election. Because this moron really believes that starting a war with Iran will guarantee you win an election. That's what scares right. the shit out of me.
There's a lot of stuff that's scary right now. And part of the scariness is what Tom's worried about is underhanded forces that we don't see manipulating everything we think and know.
But that's always been the case. That's nothing new. That's nothing unique to now. Nothing unique to right. this point in history. That's been an ongoing problem. And frankly, yes, it is a problem. But right now, I think the bigger problem is Donald Trump.
Well, yeah. there are tipping points, though, for degrees. And let's the example I always use, and I'll let you close with this.
Mm-hmm.
What will happen if a President Sanders wants greater accommodation with Russia because he doesn't like Obama? He just follows Obama in saying we need to be able to ramp down this aggression so that Russia can ramp down its aggression. I mean, Obama and Putin put an end during their time, agreed to together to work to get more peace in Syria, which they did for a while. What if President Sanders is seen as a threat to U.S. national interest, which means the war against Russia or the growing war against Russia? What will happen then if things start to leak out about him and things start to get we start to see him get somewhat trumped?
Well, you
now,
know what?
If he starts
trying to extort foreign governments to get in the middle of it and to get political dirt on his opponents, then he deserves it. If he's being gaslighted like the nation is by Trump and his people, then we need to fight back against it. But I think you're putting the cart before the horse right now. We're dealing with it. We've got a fire going on. The country is burning. And if we don't put it out first, it doesn't matter who the deep state is afterwards, because we'll all be dead.
And my point is it matters how you put it out. Because if you have a country where one side acts illegitimately, unconstitutionally, and the other side acts illegitimately, unconstitutionally, the whole thing is broken.
Okay,
and
but what did they do? What did they do?
Ayibi talks about.
What did they do that's illegal or unconstitutional?
That goes back to the origin story of the Trump Russia, which is again a closet that turns into a ballroom.
Okay, the lines get blurred here. We're not going to get any further. I love a spirited discussion. Thomas Neuberger, I'll find him on Twitter at Gaius_Publius and at downwithtyranny.com, where he does write a couple of times a week and contributes wonderfully to the blog. And Dave Johnson, you find on Twitter at DC Johnson and writing at seeingtheforest.com when he gets around to it. Anything else to promote, you guys?
That was great. Thank you. Love
excellent
the show.
Job, Nicole. Right. Excellent job. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Sorry, didn't mean it to get so heated, but, I think we're on fire, and we need to put the fire out. Anyway, thanks. I'll talk to you later. Everyone,
Take
have a
care.
Great weekend. I will be doing a special a Monday podcast. We're not live Monday yet because we're still waiting to go live at 5 p.m., working on it. Now they're telling me maybe by Thanksgiving, we hope. But in the meantime, I will do a Monday podcast to try to pull some of the loose ends together, because next week we have testimony Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So as one woman band here is doing my best to keep you covered. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a wonderful weekend. Try to tune out the noise if you can. And we'll have you covered here. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye-bye. And thanks to our guests. Bye.